Roll sound, please. Roll sound.
KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston. ESPN 97.5.
Right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios, this is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's your host, Patrick Creighton.
It's Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. I'm Patrick Creighton with you. Jose Partido on the side of the glass. 713-780-3776. HRNP listener line. On Twitter at PCreighton1, at ParJ94, at ESPN97.5. And, guys, I need your input on something here, all right? I need your input on something. Am I crazy?
Yes.
I didn't tell you why yet. Pipe it down. Am I crazy? On my way in, now this is within the last hour, on my way into the studio, I had stopped, I got some food, I ate half of it, I wasn't going to eat the rest, and as you get to the corner there, at Chimney Rock and Westheimer, there was a homeless guy, and he's holding a sign that says, Christian and starving. So I asked him, I said, hey, are you hungry? And he says, yeah, I'm always hungry. So I offered him, you know, the half a pizza that I still had. And he says to me, are you Christian? I'm like, dude, I got you. Do you want half? He says, oh, no, I can't take that. Why not? Oh, I can't take food that I didn't see you buy because I've been poisoned for being a Christian. Now, this is the part where I'm starting to look at him with that like Scooby-Doo, like, he's been poisoned for being a Christian. He then proceeds to tell me how he's a Christian and he preaches against homosexuals because Christians don't accept homosexuals.
Why did he feel the need to tell you that?
I don't know.
Did you give him a vibe or something?
He then wanted to give me this like little pamphlet that looked about the size of a 4x6 index card. And I'm thinking, wait a second. You're supposed to be homeless and starving, and you got flyers. If you're homeless and you're starving, where did you get money to print flyers? At which point I said to him, I'm like, do you want the pizza or no? And he proceeded to continue on about how much homosexuals are like evil and whatnot. And I just drove away. You're starving. I'm offering you food. Not only did he tell me he didn't want the food, but then he wanted to tell me how homosexuals are evil. Because, you know, that whole, like, Jesus loves everyone. Apparently he didn't get to that part of the Bible or something, you know, all that. Am I crazy? All I was trying to do was feed somebody who was hungry. And instead, I got lectured by, like, all he was missing was, like, you know, like a MAGA hat or something. I don't understand.
I don't think he was all there. Evidently, right?
Dude, I really, that was like a just shoot me moment. Just freaking shoot me moment.
You should have just tossed a pizza at him and left.
I can't even. There are no words to describe what you're hungry, you're starving. See, this is what so many people tell me that these people, they act like they're homeless, they're hungry, but they're really not. Well, I can't believe that somebody who is not homeless would pretend to be homeless. That's insanity. Who the hell would do that? But the dude was like, no, I don't want your food because it could be poisoned. I'm like, well, I ate half of it. He's like, it could be poisoned. I can't touch it. All right. That was right before I made it in here today. So that was fun. We're going to have fun on the show tonight. We are going to have fun. So for this first segment here, we're going to talk about the Rockets as we get ready for this game to come on. Can you get me the Rocket game on the TV, please? Good sir.
I don't know. There's a quality TV show on.
No, there isn't. You will change it. You'll change it now. You'll change it and you'll like it. Apparently, that's all I had to do. I had to, like, you know, go with that whole and you'll like it thing. And that got us into, that got Jose into, okay, fine, I will change the channel. So the Rockets will look to close out the Jazz tonight. And Vernon Maxwell was taking the first shot tonight. Well, they caught up with Max and they asked him, you know, all right, so, you know, what do the Rockets do tonight to close out this series? Here's Mad Max talking about the Rockets.
Well, just to maintain with that grit and that heart, playing hard and just staying and remembering who you are and how you got here. And I think everything else should take care of itself, you know, not looking a game ahead and not looking ahead at the next series and just going out and finishing off these guys tonight. And I think that's what they need to be thinking about more than anything.
You know what's amazing about that? Do you hear how calm he is? Do you hear how relaxed and, you know, at peace with everything Vernon Maxwell is there? Where's the fire? Where's the intensity? Where's that animal maniacalism? He's Mad Max. Isn't he supposed to be like losing his mind? He's Vernon Maxwell looking all dapper, looking like he could still play. Just chill, calm about everything. No big deal.
More like Tame Max, am I right?
You kind of are actually right there. But since you're going to credit yourself and give yourself a self high five, before you even finish, am I right? You lose your points. Now, what's funny is the Rockets win 65 games this year. They're the best team in the NBA. They are the most, like, historically the most efficient offensive team ever. And this inevitable meeting between the Rockets and the Warriors, as, look, the Rockets are going to close out the Jazz tonight. And the Warriors are going to close out the Pelicans tonight. These things are going to happen. But there are a lot of quote-unquote talking heads who just can't give the Rockets the credit that they're due. And this one I thought was funny. Jason McIntyre, USA Today, who also is part of Fox Sports, was on Coward's show. Surprise. And here's what he had to say about the Rockets and the Warriors' ultimate meeting.
What's going to happen when the Rockets speed date against my Warriors? Is this going to be a five-game series and just a blowout and we're going to be saying the same stuff about the Rockets that we just are saying about the Raptors? I believe that's where this is headed, Colin. I know I've been wrong about the Rockets all season. I bashed them. I said, no Chris Paul and James Harden. That's not going to work. But when you look at this team against the Jazz, you know, they blew them out twice this weekend, which was a surprise, right? I thought Utah would win one. But I just look at this Warriors team and I think they're going to annihilate Houston. That's what it's shaping up to be for me. I feel like Houston has some Toronto speed dating fraudulent tendencies.
And that right there is the perfect example of someone admitting to you, I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about, yet continuing to talk about it.
I have two questions. One, my Warriors?
Yes, apparently Jason McIntyre purchased the Warriors from the Laker brothers. He is now a part owner of the team, in case you didn't know.
My second question is...
That is sarcasm, by the way.
Who the hell was controlling the levels on his mic? The audio sounds awful, and it's nothing that I did to manipulate it. The chipping, it's awful. This is from a major TV show. And it sounds awful.
That I can't help you with.
Jeez.
This is the part that I love the most. He's trashing the Rockets, and then he says, I've been wrong about them all year. how he said, I was wrong about Chris Paul and James Harden and that it wouldn't work. He was one of those, you know, mouth runners that Harden and Paul could not coexist. So all year long, he has maintained the, oh, the Rockets are frauds, the Rockets are frauds, the Rockets are frauds. They've won 65 freaking games. You know, they blast through the first round against the T-Wolves. They're about to blast the Jazz right out of the playoffs. But they're frauds, even though he's been wrong about them all freaking year.
Would you please shut the hell up?
Dude, that dude needs to go on the list. Miles just, hi, my name is Bill. I don't actually know anything about basketball, but let me tell you about basketball. See, first you dribble, and then you shoot, and you put it through this round hole. When you get it in, you get points. Then you have to play defense. If you don't play enough defense and you don't get it in the hole enough, you don't win. I've been wrong about the Rockets all year, but let me tell you how much they're going to get pummeled. What? If you've already been wrong about the Rockets all year, why do I give a flying rat's ass what you have to say about the Houston Rockets?
I thought I was going to have to dump you for a second.
What did you think I was going to say?
You know what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, you thought I was going to say a flying truck?
Yeah.
No flying trucks. Flying rat's asses, yes. But no flying trucks. Flying trucks are bad. That's like out of Sharknado. Trucks, sharks, these are bad things. I can't go that far off the reservation. But here's a guy who is one of the most prominent writers at USA Today. Here's the guy who's on a major radio network who basically just told you, I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to the Houston Rockets, but I'm going to run my mouth anyway. Why? Well, why not? What's the worst that could happen? I'll have to say I'm wrong again. And you'll all forget in like 20 minutes because something else will happen. And you'll all think that I'm great because I'll just, you know, get a better tan and sit here in my suit and tell you that I'm smart. I have no use for people like that. I expect that if you're in our industry, you know, you're a media personality when it comes to either covering sports, sports on the radio, sports on television, maybe sports on radio and television, that you might, just might, have an educated clue on what the hell goes on the things that you're talking about. Why do you need to even be educated on sports if you can just get up there and go, well, I've been wrong, but so what? I've been wrong all year. Who cares?
It's his team.
Oh, I forgot. He owns the Warriors. He's the owner. Forgot about that. My bad. Yeah. No, by the way, he does not own the team. Just so you know. He's just a fanboy. All right. This is the one thing about AJ Hinch this year that I think he can do better. It's next.
You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, as long as we're getting into some of the stupidity of the day, this is going to be a theme. So, some girl put a dude on blast on Twitter today because he called her.
I saw that.
You saw me tweet this out earlier, right? So she puts this kid on blast because she writes, meeting me in a club on Friday and calling me unannounced and uninvited on Monday is a very surefire way to guarantee I never ever respond to you. As you get through some of the comments, which are both hilarious and mind-numbing, we find that she apparently danced with said guy for 15 minutes at a club on Friday and gave him her number. He waited Saturday, Sunday, until Monday night to call her. She's mad that he called. Here's a great idea. Now, I want you to, you know, pull up a chair and listen as Uncle Patrick gives you some great advice. If you don't want people to call you, don't give them your phone number. There, because it's not like there aren't, I don't know, 9,500 different social media digital platform messaging services that you could have used if you wanted to ensure it was a text-only conversation. Also, A, if you don't like someone, don't give them your number. If you've only met him for 15 minutes and you gave him your number, you might be a dumbass. That round object on top of your shoulders is not a hat rack. You're supposed to use it. You know, there's a brain in there somewhere. Maybe if you had half of one, your head would tilt to one side. This is like the most millennial stupid thing ever.
Yeah, the worst thing is she felt the need to post that. Like, what are you getting out of it?
The internet to realize that you're a massively stuck-up bitch and complete idiot.
It's so annoying. Why do people go through these avenues of social media to do stuff like this?
Let me hold up a giant sign that says, I'm an idiot, and post it on social media for the whole world to see. This is genius. Yes. I cannot explain the grand stupidity, but I will say this about the internet. The internet gives us the most free entertainment content in the world just on the stupidity of those who use it. All right, so the Astros, I'm not going to say they're off to a bad start because they're not off to a bad start. Now, they're not hitting on all cylinders. And I know this is something I've talked about before, that really good teams pretty much play about 500 ball all year, and they'll go on about three or four runs where, you know, they'll go 12-1. They'll go 15-2. They'll go 18-3. They'll have these runs in the season where that's where they'll separate themselves from the pack. You know, last year's Astros went on four runs, and the other parts of the year, they were 50-52. Well, they won 101 games, and they won the World Series. It just so happens that instead of getting off to a super hot start, they've been a little slow getting out of the gate. They haven't been, and none of them have been slow. They've been inconsistent. You know, there's a lot talked about, oh, the offense. Well, they have the third most runs scored in the American League. And the reason we talk about the American League is because we know they score more runs in the American League than the National League. So third most runs scored in the American League also happens to be third most runs scored in all of baseball. They've been inconsistent. They've scored in bunches or they haven't scored much. But the offense will eventually even out and become more consistent as guys start to find their strides. And I don't think anybody actually believes that the Astros, you know, they're 22-15, they're a half a game out of first place. You know, the Angels have three games in hand, but, you know, they got to win them. I don't think anybody believes the Astros offense will not eventually come around. I mean, you see that guys are coming around right now. Just think about where guys were hitting two weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, they had five guys hitting under 230. And three of them were riding the interstate. So it wasn't that long ago that the Astros couldn't hit beans. That they were out. The only two guys who were really hitting were Altuve and Correa. That's just 2 weeks ago. All right, now, Springer's got his average up to 292. Something like 230, 224. Bregman's up to 259. Marwin's up to 248. He was riding the interstate. Reddick's up to 234. You know, it's not where you expect them to be at the end of the year, but the point is they're starting to find their swings. They're starting to get a little more comfortable at the plate, and they're starting to hit. At the end of the day, the guys who aren't hitting, Fisher's not hitting, Gattis isn't hitting, Marisnik's not hitting. Everybody else starting to come around. You know, Yuli's up to 279. Now, the power is not there, but we knew the power wasn't going to be there early because he's coming off that wrist surgery. So you knew it was going to take a little bit of time before his power came back. He hit 299 last year. He's hitting 279 right now. He's had 86 at-bats coming off of a surgery. That bodes pretty well that he's going to continue to find a stroke. So I don't think people need to be, you know, in blind panic about the offense. Yes, you'd like to see them not get zeros and ones sometimes and then 16s and 11s other times. It'll even itself out. The starting rotation has been ungodly. Those guys can't do anything wrong. Even Keuchel, who's got five losses, has actually been, you know, not that bad. Even though he's got five losses, his ERA is, what, 3.53? If I told you, you know, you guys got a 3.5 ERA and a 1.18 whip, you wouldn't think that he's 2-5. He's been the recipient of some lack of run scoring sometimes. But Verlander's 117, Cole's 142, Morton's 216. You know, Morton's throwing the third hardest fastball in Major League Baseball. And his arm hasn't fallen off. I don't know how either one of those two things are legitimately possible, but they are. The biggest issue with this team has been the lack of consistency of the bullpen. And in that 5-9 stretch they just went through right before, you know, last night's bludgeoning of the AA Oakland A's, the bullpen suffered just some absolutely catastrophic failures. And it wasn't one guy. It's been a bunch of guys because it seems like AJ is still tinkering around with who is and who isn't going to be in what role. They have not established a hierarchy in that bullpen yet. And now that we're into May, there's really no reason why they have not established a hierarchy in that bullpen. You know, Joe Smith has been a really good pitcher in Major League Baseball for 10 years. For 10 years, he has been consistent. He has been solid. He has been a late game guy. He's even had to close sometimes. Well, he's pitched not quite 11 innings, and it hasn't been a good 11 innings. You know, that game against the Angels where he comes in, and this was the frustrating part. Just go back, April 24th. The Astros score 2 in the 5th, 2 in the 6th, take a 5-4 lead. Joe Smith comes in the 7th inning and hands over a 4-spot. They lose the game. Now, that's the spot he should be pitching, 7th inning, 8th inning. But he melted down, and they lost. Okay, you go a week later, and you're playing the Yankees right here at Minute Maid, May 1st. 9th inning, 0-0. Verlander has been dominant. And Ken Giles comes into the game. It's not a save situation. It's a 0-0 game. And over his last 7 appearances, Giles had retired 19 straight batters. Well, he didn't have it that day. And 4 out of 5 guys get on base. He gives up 4 runs in the 9th. Will Harris has to close out the inning. They lose 4-0. 2 days later, instead of going to Giles in the save situation, Hinch goes to Harris in the save situation, and Harris couldn't get one single out. Gives up 2 hits and a walk before he gets yanked, and then Brad Peacock comes in. He lets all 3 inherited runners score, Astros lose 5-3 lead. They lose 6-5. So now Smith has failed. Giles has failed. Harris has failed. Peacock has failed. May 5th against Arizona. Chris Davinsky, his turn. Tie game. He gives up a hit. Two walks. Can't get out of the inning. They got to go to Peacock again. Peacock again can't shut the door. Astros lose 4-3. Now, I know the temptation to play around with guys because, hey, well, you know, they've got a lot of guys who can be interchangeable parts. They have a lot of guys who can be really good. Every bullpen guy will tell you the bullpen needs an order. Guys have to have roles. They pitch better when they have roles. Right now, they're all pitching like turds. And why hasn't Giles pitched since the 1st of May? You know, when you have a closer, the first thing you want to do with the closer, the guy goes out and he gives and you know he gives up some runs, you get him right back on the hill. Most important thing a closer has to have is a really short memory. You let him get up behind it, get back out there, put something positive on the book, and move on. Well, Giles hasn't had that opportunity because he hasn't been brought into a game in a week. There's no injury report on Ken Giles, so where the hell has he been? Because if he's your closer, and you haven't found a way to use him in a week, there better be an injury. And if there is an injury, why hasn't it been reported? Why hasn't it been disclosed? That's not how you treat your closer. Jose, are we supposed to go to break?
I was letting you flush out everything you had to say.
Oh, we'll just carry more over to the next segment. I looked up at the clock and I'm like, oh, I think we're supposed to be going to break right about now. 713-780-3776. Do you think the Astros should have a different order in the bullpen? Should they have any order in the bullpen? Or do you prefer AJ just, well, I'll just put up whoever I want to put up and that guy's got to do the job? I think they should have an order. Most relievers will tell you there should be an order. We'll get into that. Plus, you know, should some of those bats at the end of the bench, Derek Fisher, Evan Gattis, should their seats be warm, maybe hot right now, with some guys who are hitting AAA taking their spot? Late hits.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So this is pretty much, you know, where we are with the Astros in the bullpen is, well, who the hell's the closer? And what is the order? What is everybody's role? Do you guys know what their role is? Honestly, I don't think they do. I don't think guys have a clue what their role is. Because we were all led to believe Ken Giles is the closer. He hasn't pitched in a week. Hey, the most recent, since May 1st, those save opportunities, well, they're not going to Ken Giles. Now, this is a team that has three different guys with saves and four different guys with blown saves. They've got six saves of their 22 wins, and they've got, five blown saves. And it's a different guy getting the blown save because there's no consistency. And if you're going to have your closer, that guy at the back of the pen that you trust to be your lockdown guy, you've actually got to, A, show some faith in him, and B, give him the opportunity to be the lockdown guy. You know, otherwise you are bullpen by committee, and bullpen by committee never works. Now, we saw last year the Astros couldn't even go to a bullpen by committee. They just went to starters. Started going tandem starter because the bullpen was such a wreck. Or the fact they just didn't trust anybody in the bullpen. But bullpen by committee doesn't get you anywhere. You know, and I know, okay, look, they're carrying 13 pitchers, which is more than usual. Most teams don't carry 13 pitchers, especially in the American League. Well, really, at all. Nobody carries 13 pitchers. And the reason they carry 13 pitchers is because you got Peacock and McHugh, who are your insurance policies, and you can't send either one down. Neither one of those guys, you don't have options on either one of those guys. So you can't send them down. And you know, just look, you know it's going to happen at some point. Keuchel's going to go on a DL. McCullers is going to go on a DL. Troy Morton's going to go on a DL. Those trains are never late. So I understand why they are keeping those guys on the team, why they haven't traded them, why they haven't tried to move on, because they know they're going to need them. You know, I know McHugh, more so than Peacock, is going to feel put out because McHugh's been a good starter in this. McHugh's won 19 games in this league. So I understand why he feels like he's being shafted, because it's a guy who's pitched well for them, and he's pitched well out of the bullpen so far. But they got to keep him stretched out. You know, if you're going to have Peacock come in these late inning situations and go an inning here and an inning there, you've got to make sure that you keep Colin McHugh stretched out, because if you do need that starter, somebody's got to be able to go 5-6. And right now that guy's going to be Colin McHugh. And because we've got so many guys in the pen, it makes it harder to give everybody regular work. Some guys just aren't going to get regular work. Honestly, Tony Sipp, like last night was the perfect example of when Tony Sipp should pitch. Up by 5 runs, down by 5 runs, up a zillion runs, whatever. That's when Tony Sipp comes in. Forget high leverage, low leverage, no leverage situation. That's when Tony Sipp's allowed to pitch, because he's been brutal. So let that go that direction. You know, but Joe Smith, Hector Rondon, Will Harris, those guys have proven track records of success in late inning situations. So that's where you should be using them. They're used to getting regular work in those situations. So give them regular work. If Ken Giles is your closer, and we start at the back of the pen. If Ken Giles is the closer, Ken Giles should get every single save opportunity that comes around unless he has pitched 3 days in a row. That is the only time Ken Giles should not be on the mound in a save situation, as if he's gone 3 days in a row. Otherwise, if he's your closer, treat him like your closer and put him on the bump. I mean, did he sprain a thumb punching himself in the face? You know, did he break his jaw? Why has Ken Giles not been in a game for a week? Did he have to undergo psychiatric evaluation? I mean, really? There's no excuse for this. That is just bullpen mismanagement 101. Just different guy out there every time. That is never going to succeed. That is the one part of sabermetrics even Bill James accepts doesn't work. Not everybody can pitch the ninth. It's a different mindset. It's a different mentality. Not everybody can pitch the ninth. We know, because when he got hired by the Red Sox, they tried it and it failed miserably. Somebody's got to be the king in the bullpen, and then everybody else has a pecking order. That's how you get consistency. And that is all you ask for from your bullpen. Consistency. And I don't mean consistently suck. I don't mean consistently blow leads. That is how a bullpen has to work. All right, maybe AJ wanted to tinker with guys, see how they handle different roles. Well, you know what? It's May 8th. It's time for you to know what guys' roles are. It's time for you to put some order in. No more tinkering around. Now you know. All right, this season could determine if this huge local star stays local. Next.
You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, we are, it's like late in the second quarter, and Rocks at a 43-35 lead over the Jazz. So it hasn't been an offensive explosion, but they're winning. Do you like the black jerseys?
I love the black jerseys.
You like the, see, I like the red ones. I'm not.
They've had those red ones for too long now.
Yeah, but black's not their color.
It looks sick though.
Yeah. Not a big fan of the black jerseys. I'm much more a fan of the red ones. It's just me. I'm not. I guess. The Mets in the late 90s had gone to this alternative black jersey. And, you know, the Mets were traditionally blue and orange and white. So the black color wasn't really part of what they had taken. Because the Mets colors are a combination of the Dodgers and the Giants. But they took the orange from the Giants and not the black from the Giants. So the black jersey just got played out. But I like traditional colors in jerseys. Like when the Jazz start wearing weird color jerseys, anytime you see a team wear weird color jerseys, it bothers me. I'm not a fan of those. All right, so this particular Houston superstar is probably facing the biggest season of his career, and it's weird to say it, but it's J.J. Watt. Now, J.J. is, you know, says he's getting healthier. He's out there. He's playing golf and actually was beating his brother at golf when our local media people caught up with him. And this is, I believe this was courtesy of HoustonTexans.com. Here's J.J. Watt giving us a little update.
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, obviously, we're all very excited. Guys are putting in a lot of work. You know, the offseason really isn't a time for big proclamations or statements on what you're going to do. It's a time to put in the work, enjoy some time with family and some of the things you don't get to do during the season. It's mainly about getting yourself ready for the season. And I think our guys have been doing a really good job of that. We're really enjoying being around each other, putting in the work. We have a great strength program. We have a great nutrition program. It's been going really well.
Does it feel a little bit like a reboot? And I guess, does it need to when you have a lot of change in the offseason just because it's a year-to-year type of league?
Oh, yeah. Like you said, it's very much a year-to-year type of league. Every year is a brand new year. And I think we're seeing a lot of new things around our building. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of players that are coming back off injuries from last year. There's some new guys in the organization, the strength program, the nutrition program, the way we do things a little bit. It's a bit of a fresh start, yeah. And obviously, for myself, I'm very much looking forward to that type of fresh start. So I'm enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun, and it's been really good.
All right. Now, so there's JJ telling you how he's feeling better and looking forward to, you know, a bunch of guys who got hurt last year. He's one of them. You know, Whitney's another. A lot of guys got hurt last year. You know, Deshaun Watson. And they're looking forward to getting the team back together. Here's the thing. JJ's been hurt now 2 years in a row. And this year, JJ's due to essentially take a $15 million cap hit. The $11 million base salary. And then there's, you know, guaranteed money from restructure and signing bonus and whatnot that pulls together at a total of $15 million cap hit, of which only $6 million is essentially guaranteed money. His dead cap is only $6 million bucks. Now, there's no way they're walking away from J.J. Watt this year, age 29, coming off two injured seasons. They still believe that he has the chance to get back to being mostly J.J. Watt. This is probably the biggest season of his career. Because it will come to the head if J.J. either can't stay healthy or is no longer near the player he once was production-wise. Because for 2019, J.J.'s base salary is $13 million. And it's $2 million dead cap money. And that's going to bring you to the head of, JJ, we need to restructure your deal. We want to offer you an extension. We're going to redo your deal. And at that point, it's, are you willing to take less? If you're the Texans, you will wind up in the very unenviable position of having to tell the face of your franchise, because JJ is the face of the franchise, despite the fact he hasn't been on the field that much. You'll have to tell the face of your franchise, we need to cut your income. We know you're wildly popular. We need to cut your income. You're not as good as you used to be. We can't count on you the way that we used to. Now, a lot of people probably think JJ, being, you know, ever the team guy that he is, would accept that. Maybe he would. What if he doesn't? What if what he considers an acceptable pay range is not what the Texans consider an acceptable pay range? This is an important season for JJ because essentially, with next year only having $2 million of dead cap, this is like a contract year for him. Now, either that contract's going to go up or the contract's going to go down, but this is a contract year for him. And it really is that important for him to be able to produce after essentially 2 years of being on the sidelines. Now, I don't know a single person that's not looking forward to JJ, you know, coming back and being productive and hopefully at least showing you 80% of what he once was. Because 80% of, you know, three-time defensive player of the year, JJ Watt, is still a hell of a football player. But can he be that guy? Can he stay on the field? You know, when you think about the possibility of what the potential of the defense is with JJ and Clowney and Merciless, and you think, man, these guys should be able to get so much pressure on quarterbacks that other teams' quarterbacks should basically just be shaking in their boots. Now, the Texans are happy to get Covington back. You know, Christian Covington probably going to be, you know, the other defensive end in the alignment. So, JJ, Covey, DJ Reader, McKinney, Cunningham, JD, and Whitney is your front seven that you're expecting to get a good amount of pressure. Guys got to stay healthy. You know, you feel a little better about the defensive secondary because, you know, they signed Aaron Colvin. He's going to be the slot corner. But he's a really, I mean, that guy might be the best slot corner in football. And Justin Reed, who they drafted, Eric Reed's brother, you know, that's a guy who had a late first-round grade and they got him in the third round. That guy is essentially a massive steal. That's the kind of guy that can start right away. I would not be surprised if Justin Reed is the starting safety over Andre Howe in the defensive backfield, Justin Reed and Tyrann Mathieu as your starters. And whether it's Honey Badger and Reed and Howe or Mathieu, Reed, and, you know, will they consider the idea of Jackson at safety? Because that's something that they've talked about. They've kicked this idea around for a couple of years now, and they haven't done it. So, you know, are they going to move a different guy over to safety? You know, could Bartomosi wind up going to safety? You know, the reason why Kareem has always been the guy that gets talked about, and look, this is from the Texans. They're the ones who have kicked it around. You know, I mean, I remember asking Kareem this, it's almost three off seasons ago. Well, the first time they were kicking the idea of moving him to safety because Kareem's a guy that likes to lay lumber. He's a hitter. Kareem doesn't break. Now, let's face it. Some of these other cornerbacks that the Texans have, and you know what two I'm talking about, those guys are fragile. Kareem's not. Kareem get up in the box and lay out. And that's why, you know, the idea was always, well, it would be Kareem. He's the most natural one. Because he's the guy who'll drop his shoulder and hit you. And then not have to come out of the game. But we should see some examples of three safety alignments for the Texans, you know, this year on defense. And, I mean, I love the three safety alignment. And you're starting to see more teams utilize the three safety alignment. But this year, what they can get up front, and again, the defensive backfield has been reinforced. So you certainly hope they'll do better than they did a year ago. You certainly hope you don't have to see Corey Moore on the field, because every time you see Corey Moore on the field, he's chasing a guy that he didn't cover. Corey Moore is always running to the side of the field that he blew. This is a contract year, essentially, for J.J. Watt, and I think everybody wants it to be a big season for J.J. Watt. All right, we're at halftime. Rockets are up 54. I can't read that. What was it?
46, I believe.
54-46, the half. Which is good because the Jazz had gotten on an 8-0 run there for a little bit and tied the game. So from that point, you know, tied at 43, Rockets go 11-3 to end the half. 54-46 at the half. All right. Hour two coming up. Again, it's still early, but there might be a couple of seats at the end of that Astros bench that are getting a little hot. We'll get into them next.